Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with Mr. Renaissance Man himself,
Kevin Sampson,
the founder of the DC Black Film Fest, and full disclosure, a colleague of mine back from our master's days at American University. He's been in TOP a bunch to talk about the Film Fest, but this day, this time, sir, it's not about the movies playing at the festival. It's not about all that gaga. It is about you, sir, because we are, thanks to Rob Woodfork here, we are doing the Black History Month series of, we want people that are making Black history today, not in, you know, not in the past, but today, in the present, making history now in the DC area, and I of course thought of you for the entertainment slice here. So thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, man. I really appreciate you just having me. So this is an honor. Thanks.
Awesome. Now, before we get to your DC days and festival director, film critic days, all of that, I want to take me back all the way. You were born, you know, in Carolina. Take me to the roots, you know, where you grew up and how you actually got into, you know, to movies and even music at the time too, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. So let's go all the way back to Orangeburg, South Carolina. That's where I was born. My parents, they got married. My dad was working actually in the prison system as a physician. So, in order to, you know, pay back on student scholarship that he received, he had to go and give some time back in the community. So that's how we got to, Orangeburg and then Columbia, South Carolina. So I did most of my rearing as a child in Columbia, South Carolina. Go Gamecocks. and went to the University of South Carolina, where I studied media arts there. And film is just one of those things that was like always in my life. Like I just enjoyed story and storytelling. And I felt that from a young age, I felt like the only way that you can experience being another person is through watching film.
What did Roger Ebert call it?
The ultimate empathy machine. So, and it's so true. I mean, that's how, for me at least, you know, I was able to like really look at the world and see, you know, different places, different faces, and things like that. So growing up, I was an actor at first, and in high school, you know.
Really? You acted in high school plays?
Yeah, man.
All right, wait, you gotta tell me which ones.
man, we did Our Town, and I was thinking about this the other day because I was like this, the newspaper boy that like some kind of way his leg got hurt. I forgot how. And I remember walking out on stage and I wasn't limping, and then the narrator is like, and he got a limp when blah, 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 blah. And then I was like, oh, yeah. And then I started limping, right? but, you know, it was always funny because in high school, you know, it was as a Black performer, it was always this running joke of it's not until your senior year that you actually get a role with, like, lines. So that's really what happened with me. It was like, by the time I got to my senior year, like finally, I was like the third person, I guess, within the play. I forgot what the name of that play was. Oh man, it was a musical too. So I had to sing a little bit and all that good stuff. But anyways, going to college, I said, well, you know, as an actor, you get to be one part of, you know, the cog in the machine, right? But as a director, you get to look at the whole entire story and you really kind of get to manipulate it or tell it the way that you see fit. So going into college, I decided to get behind the camera so that I could do more of the storytelling.
And what was your what was your major in undergrad?
Media arts. Okay. So my thing has always been film. Like I never changed majors. I knew what I wanted to do. And so in between when we met Jason in grad school at American University, I shot two documentaries. One documentary was looking at Hurricane Katrina 2 years later after, you know, the hurricane came through New Orleans.
Did you go down there for that?
Yeah, my family is from New Orleans, so my dad's side of the family is from New Orleans. So I went down 2 years after the hurricane and just, shot like what was there. And I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of places outside of downtown Bourbon Street, Canal, all that kind of stuff. It looked the same as when the hurricane came through.
Right.
And so it took such a long time. So I just documented that, looking at it through the lens of, my family, teachers. I even interviewed a representative. And so I put that together. And then also, I don't know if you remember this, but there was the tale of the Gina Six. And so it was a story in Gina, Louisiana, in which there were six black students. And there was this big fight, but there was like a noose that was hung at what they called the white tree. And so what I did was it was kind of like a get on the bus where this documentary of just following people that were involved with the NAACP from Columbia, South Carolina, down to Gina, Louisiana, covering the rally and just really kind of getting the feedback of the people that were making this trip. Like it was an overnight bus trip and my friend Pierce Cook, he helped me shoot that. So after shooting these two documentaries, of course, obviously there's always been this kind of I don't know what you want to call it, background of advocacy and looking out for the interests of black people through film. My wife now, I think girlfriend at the time, in all her infinite wisdom, she was like, "You need to go back to grad school. You need to brush up on, some of your skills." And it that was one of the smartest things I think that I could have done because, I wasn't totally there. And so that's what brought me to American University. As I said, girlfriend at the time, she was at Georgetown, and then I came up, and we eventually got married through the course of grad school, and from
Yeah, but
there.
I want to just real quick before we go, into even more into grad school and their film fest and everything. Double back for me really fast to, growing up. Like, did you have certain favorite movies or, what was there a certain one that sparked you right from the beginning?
The funny thing is, on Picture Lock, for my radio show and podcast, the first question I always start out with, when did you first fall in love with film? And unfortunately, I cannot answer that
I know.
question myself
It's like it's
because,
always been there.
yeah, exactly. Like, I just don't remember. I can tell you that I do remember coming out of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We went into the bathroom. My dad, took me and my brother into the bathroom. I was so fired up. Like, I kicked him in the knee. And I remember, I actually hurt him doing that. And, but the point of that is I've just always remembered leaving films and my whole like energy is just changed. And so I do remember Beauty and the Beast, if you remember that when that first animation came out and how like I would watch like the behind the scenes and they would talk about the animated cells and how long it took to create the ballroom scene.
Right, the
And then,
chandelier shot.
right, exactly.
Yeah.
That is the exact shot. And so I think growing up, like you said, film was always there. I do remember in high school, Fast and the Furious. That's one of my favorite guilty pleasure
Sure.
franchises. Mainly because when that thing came out, my mom, she had this 2001. This is my senior year, 2001 Acura. Just got it. I went to see the movie with my buddy at the time, David Williams. Came out of there, and it was a red light. And I'm just like vroom, vroom, revving the engine. And, I'm so affected by the movie that when the green light hits, like I just hit the gas and the car goes, and then it takes off. But I didn't realize that, like, you need to put it, I guess, in neutral and then rev it up. And, I'm just always transformed and transported by these films. I think growing up, I have to say, one of the biggest impacts or in terms of movies that I didn't realize at the time was It's a Wonderful Life. My mom used to watch that movie every single Christmas, and
You know
I
I
didn't
love that
realize
movie.
and yeah
Preaching to the choir on that one.
Exactly. I did not realize until I got older, like, how good of a film that film actually is. And, like, honestly, to me, if there's, like, a film that I have to, you know, you think about your kids and you want to sit someone down and say, hey, like, this is the meaning of life, right, in a sense.
Right.
It's A Wonderful Life. Like
what really matters.
Exactly. And I think that, that's one of those special films that, like, I was watching this thing by myself this Christmas. I haven't quite infused that into my family tradition now, like with my wife and kids. So I'm crying in the corner by myself.
Spielberg called it a five hanky movie. It really is. I get misty every time, which is crazy because I've seen it a billion times. It works every time.
Exactly. And I loved how you run down your street, like, right? And whenever you do the screening of it in your town in Frederick. So, you know, it's really cool.
Oh, that's great, man. All right. Well, I want to get back to the film festivals in a minute, but if you allow me to sidetrack for one more second.
Of course.
Weren't you in? I want to hear about your music group. Because when I was in film school, I remember you telling me all about. We even went and shot a concert for Speech at Arrested Development. And I remember you talking about how you used to be in a music group. So I want to hear about that past life before we get back to the film fest.
Yeah, most definitely. Man, so my brother, and when he was in high school, he started this group called The Elements. It actually became like, I think it was like a hip hop, like after school course or something like that. And within it, there was like, a hip hop group called The Elements. It was made up of a bunch of different high school kids. From there, I was in college at the time, but my brother's always made beats. Like, he's living in Atlanta right now, and, you know, he works his 9-to-5, but he's actually working with artists, musicians, and I'm just waiting on him to pop in a second. But the point is, he was making music, and, you know, hip-hop was always something that was huge for us, and suddenly, you know, it was five guys, me, my brother, Tim Coakley, Brian Connor, and Marcus Thomas. We all came together to form The Elements. I don't even really remember kind of like how this thing happened, but we were just like, you know, we all loved music, loved hip hop, and we all brought this different style together to create what was The Elements. And so we created an album. We started kind of doing different tours and performing, opening for such acts as 112, Lupe Fiasco, Kanye West. I actually just posted, I finally found that photo. I took a picture with Kanye right after we had opened for him my trio.
Where was that? Where did you open for Kanye?
That was at the Carolina Coliseum in Columbia, South Carolina.
Wow.
And so this was like that old Kanye, the Kanye we all love with the College Dropout. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it was crazy. It was a cool time. And I learned a lot from that group. I think that eventually, like, we all kind of went our separate ways, because sometimes, you know, when you have five different people in a group, man, there's so much that I learned from that group, just in terms of like leadership and like communication and, you know, working with one another. But we had a really good time and had a good run at it. I think we could have gone all the way if we had really applied, you know, ourselves. But again, I think film has always been my first love. And so I just decided, hey, I'm gonna go to grad school. I'm going to go to do this film thing.
Perfect. And so bring it back around. That's a good transition back. American University, you get your MFA or MA?
MFA.
Remind us what your thesis project was?
Yeah, so my thesis for my MFA, and the reason I got the MFA is because I've always wanted to teach on a collegiate level, just in terms of giving back. I think it's fun to be able to spark young minds, and that's a cliche saying, but I think it's very important. Especially for those of us that have, you know, see the world from a different lens, right? Different viewpoints, and being able to open up other people's minds. Somebody did that for us. Somebody did that for me. And so my thesis started out as 315, but then we had to move it to 215 because the basic log line of the film is that on his last day of work, a Muslim American uncovers a terrorist plot and has 1 hour to save himself and his coworkers. So basically the film, it was kind of inspired by the film Arlington Road.
I love that movie. Yeah, with Jeff Bridges and Tim Robbins. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so the whole theme behind it is, you know, what perceptions we have. Right. And so, you know, at the time, you know, it's huge in terms of Muslim Americans and how we were looking at them, and automatically, like, if there's, you know, a plot to kill someone at the office, then it has to be the Muslim guy. And so that was kind of the whole thesis and my literal thesis. And yeah, you helped me work on that one. That was really fun, man. Good times.
Absolutely. All right. So you graduate, you know, you got the master's, the MFA. Like you said, you know, you could go different ways. Am I going to teach? Are you going to, you know, keep making films? What are you going to do? Maybe a little of all of it. And somehow you find your way to Arlington Independent Media. Explain first what that is, and then how you wound up founding Picture Lock there. They have a TV studio there. You started, you made yourself into a movie critic.
Yeah, man. So I graduated 2011 from American University. I think a major important linchpin in my story is, you know, my daughter was born in 2012. And so, you know, you have to get a job. And so that's how I got over at Arlington Independent Media. Arlington Independent Media is a public access station in Arlington, Virginia. And so, you know, you have your PEG channels, public access, the government channel, and they're public access. And so basically, working there, I was able to be a staff producer, in which I was able to, you know, help teach people how to use Final Cut, Adobe Premiere. But then also they have a TV studio. And so we taught, you know, TV studio as well as field production. So going out into, you know, the street and being able to tell stories. So, you know, with public access, it is exactly what it says it is. It's an opportunity for the public to have access to media equipment and to be able to tell their stories, and then also being able to put it on, you know, TV. So while I was working there, you know, doing this, I was like, hey, do you guys have, you know, a film review show? And they were like, well, we had one like years ago, but, you know, nobody's doing that. So at the time, I had Picture Lock, which was just my blog. And so I decided, well, let me go ahead and make this film review TV show. And that's how Picture Lock kind of started in terms of actually becoming TV. You know, I was able to highlight independent filmmakers. That was one of the big things that I wanted to do as an independent filmmaker myself. And so it started out as, you know, I'm going to take, you know, a modern film, something that's out in theaters now, compare it to a classic, and then, you know, do an interview with an indie filmmaker. And it's just morphed from there. You know, eventually AIM, they started a low power FM radio station, WERA 96.7. So the Picture Lock went from TV to radio. And so now,
you know, also online too, right? Like, don't you have a crop of writers writing for you now?
Yeah, I do, man. So you know, any students, generally I go back to AU, that are like budding critics, you know, I have them go and they go check out some of the screenings. I'm able to then, you know, kind of edit their work, help them and mature them as film critics, but then also giving them the opportunity to go on the radio show. And the radio show airs every Friday at 3 o'clock in the DC area. And so it's a really good time. It's crazy to look back and, you know, now many years later, things have kind of grown. But I really enjoy just being able to talk to, you know, indie filmmakers. And honestly, you know, last year I was able to get the Donald H. McGannon Award just for my work with people of color and women. And I think that's one of the things I pride, I guess, myself on, but just in general, I think it's kind of a no-brainer, but, you know, making sure that women and people of color, their stories are able to be told and that they have a place that they can go to say, hey, I made a movie and it's out now. And so I'm just grateful that I'm able to do that and use, you know, kind of Picture Lock, at least in that aspect. That's where I kind of do my catch-all. So as we get into DC Black Film Festival and why I feel that it was important to start that, Picture Lock is where I can really kind of catch everyone and make sure that everyone has an opportunity to have their voice heard.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, I mean, really the one connecting tissue between Picture Lock and then DC Black Film Fest, which is sort of the final grand finale, what I want to talk about here. But first, the connecting tissue there is you sign on with Rosebud Film Fest. I assume you're in you're in Arlington for Arlington Independent Media, and Rosebud obviously is there in Arlington. How did you take over that? Because that festival had been around a while before you, right? But then they asked you to take it over?
Yeah, exactly. So it was pretty incredible just being there at Arlington Independent Media. Kind of like I said, with Picture Lock going on, I kind of became the resident film guy. And Arlington Independent Media had been running or taking over the Rosebud Film Festival, which was started in 1990. And it was specifically to highlight filmmakers in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And so Arlington Independent Media took over in the early 2000s. So then I took over from Jackie Steven. And so it was a great way for me to be able to cut my teeth, learning about how to run a film festival. And from there, I had always known that I wanted to have my own film festival before I was asked to start running Rosebud. But this was just a great way for me to be able, again, to kind of cut my teeth, make mistakes, learn. But on, you know, the company dollar, if you will. And so I just decided, hey, okay, it's that time. Let me go ahead and step out and do the DC Black Film Festival. And I'll say this, the way that the DC Black Film Festival came into fruition. So if you remember back in the day, Think Like a Man 2 came out. When I went to see Think Like a Man 2, I was super excited because Think Like a Man 1 had surprised me. Like, I thought it was going to be a joke. I didn't think it was really going to be. But it was cool. I saw Black Love on the screen, on the big screen. They were playing for each other's heart. And so it really impacted me in a way that, like, I think I was just so surprised that, you know, this actually had something to it. So Think Like a Man 2 comes out and, you know, it's the Kevin Hart show. You know, we're going to see who can throw the biggest bachelor or bachelorette party. And it was really silly. But I was like, man, you guys lost what was so great about the first one. So I wrote this open letter to Black screenwriters. And I was just saying, hey, like, we need to be able to tell our stories and we got to do a much better job than this. The fact of the matter is, Think Like a Man 2 wasn't even written by a Black person. So that was even more to my point, is that, like, we got to control our stories. And so, you know, I got a whole bunch of feedback from, you know, filmmakers that were out there, and they were saying, you know, we don't have either the financial resources or, you know, the places to show our work. And so I realized that this was, you know, just a bigger intrinsic issue. So I decided at first I was going to do a documentary, going back to, as I told you, you know, always doing these advocacy docs, whether it was New Orleans Still Matters or the Journey to the White Tree. So I figured, let me just do a documentary. So I started this Kickstarter. I said, okay, in order for me to make this documentary and do it right, I need $30,000, right? Stupid me, the whole Kickstarter game and, like, raising that money is kind of a hard thing to do. But it was a good, you know, kind of slap in the face, wake up call, a little bit of embarrassing. But through it, I was able to swallow my pride and learn that, hey, you know what? If I can't highlight it through documentary, at least I could create a platform in which, Black or African American, or actually, as we'd like to say, people of African descent can either have stories that are about them or told by them. And so that's when the DC Black Film Festival started in 2017. We're going into year three now. Call for entries is open. So we're definitely looking forward to getting stories from all over the globe. But the only stipulation in terms of submitting to our festival is that one or more of the above the line crew has to be of African descent. So really, it's more about unity and inclusion, because basically what we're saying is that your writer, director, producer, or your main actor has to be of African descent. And if you cannot produce that in your film, then, you know, that's an issue, right? Like, now granted, there might be some films where, you know, it's all white or all Asian, and that's cool, no problem. But for the majority of films, I think that you need to have some kind of inclusivity in terms of minorities. And so that's our only stipulation. And it's been great so far. We've definitely, from first year to second year, we saw a good 20% increase. Already we have so many submissions that are coming in, and, you know, we're just like 13, as we record this, 13 days into open call for submissions, and we've had like over 40 submissions already. So we're well on our way.
That's for year three coming up?
Yeah, that's for year three.
Yeah.
So it's going well.
What would you say, how hard was it the first time versus, like, did you know what you were getting into? Now that you're in year three, looking back, do you say, man, I was a young whippersnapper and had no idea what, or have you learned some, you know, helpful things along the way?
I definitely would say that I've learned helpful things along the way. I mean, you know, going from Rosebud, where it was, you know, for DC, Maryland, and Virginia filmmakers, and then eventually we kind of opened it up to the world, to a festival that's a niche festival, right? And where specifically we're looking for, you know, films by or about people of African descent. There is a little bit of a difference there. And so the first year I felt like I was writing the rules. The second year I was improving on them. And the third year, I won't say that, like, now, you know, I'm just coasting, but I will say I feel a little bit more comfortable with, you know, where we're going as a film festival. I mean, my goal is to eventually be able to open up where we have, you know, like a producers institute, where we're able to take producers and, you know, kind of give them a scholarship, but allowing them to be around, you know, some big industry folks and help them with producing, the same with directing, screenwriting, etc. So that's eventually where I want to go, because, again, going back to the whole reason it started with this open letter to Black screenwriters is the importance of seeing our image on the big screen. You know, we look at Black Panther and its success last year, and, you know, for Black folks in film, last year was a hugely successful year with so many directors that were helming over $100 million, you know, domestic box office films. But this is one of the articles that I love that came out of Black Panther was Black Panther was amazing, but Suri will save the world. And so basically what it was talking about was, you know, Black Panther's sister, and how she's an engineer in Wakanda, right?
Right.
Creating all this tech. Right. And how for the little girls that saw her on the big screen, right, how much of an impact that has. So the Gina Davis Foundation, they had done this research in 2012. Brave came out, as well as The Hunger Games, right? Two films that have a female protagonist that had the bow and arrow. So the next year, archery, little girls that were going into archery and doing archery competition, it had a huge uptick. 7 out of 10 of those girls attributed it to Brave or The Hunger Games. So seeing themselves on the big screen inspired them to want to get into archery. And so in the same way, I feel that with my responsibility in terms of the DC Black Film Festival, and again, just using my platforms, whether it's PictureLock or DCBFF, I want to make sure that, you know, for my kids, they're able to see themselves on the big screen in a way that inspires them, right? It's not the same old that, you know, we've gotten in the past from Hollywood, but just great storytelling. And I think we're really starting to kind of crack through and get that these days. And I'm just excited to have a small part in that, because even on the Black Film Festival circuit, now, you know, when films are going to ABFF or Black Star or Martha's Vineyard, African American Film Festival, you know, they come through DCBFF as well. And so being able to be kind of on the precipice and seeing some of these front running films is really cool. Shout out to Deanna Winkler with United Skates, that's about to premiere on HBO now. You know, they came through last year. So it's really exciting.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you doing all that and joining us for the interview for sure. But just sort of in closing, because I know we're up against the clock, but in closing, big picture it for me. I mean, I know you weren't born in D.C., but this whole series is, you know, people making Black history today in D.C. What about the town sort of grabs you, and why is it kind of, why do you think, you know, this Carolina boy suddenly, you've started the first ever DC Black Film Fest. It's hard to believe it didn't exist, but you're the one, that Renaissance man that came up and did it. What is it about the town and the idea of just, you're making Black history here for all of these folks listening to TOP? You're on the vanguard, sir.
Man, I appreciate it. Man, D.C. is an amazing city. Just in regard to, you know, you think about different places like New York, and it has an energy to it. And D.C. has its own energy to it. And I think it's just one of those places where, you know, you can really, I mean, it's one of the most powerful cities on the planet. Big things happen in D.C. And because it's not like sprawling, right? Like, it's not a huge piece of land. It makes it that much more intimate. And so to be able to be in DC, I think there's just this energy of creativity that exists, that's tangible, and that it's just exciting to be a part of. And so you know, you go back to, you know, Black Broadway and U Street and like all these different, you know, just famous, historically famous and culturally significant things. Being able to start DC Black Film Festival has definitely been an honor. And, you know, I'm just excited to be able to do it. You know, like with anything, you know, it takes hard work. It takes, you know, sacrifice. But what's really exciting is the conversations that happen, you know, at the festival after the lights go up, and just seeing the impact that it's making on the community. So it's really exciting.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, sir. I know you got, you know, some daddy duties awaiting you now. So we'll let you run. But thank you so much. You're generous with your time. I love you, man. I love you. So, everybody, Kevin Sampson.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it, Jason. Thank you. It's always good to talk to you.
All right. We'll catch up again soon.